And what's cool is that long term, that the more that you're actually committed without worrying about what the feeling is, actually the deeper the feeling grows as you go because you've built a life around prayer and connection with God.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. I'm speaking today in Good Faith with Dr. Joseph Vukov, who's an associate professor of philosophy at Loyola University in Chicago. He's the author of Navigating Faith and Science from 2022, The Perils of Perfection in 23, and numerous academic articles on topics from the ethics of neuroscience to the philosophy of mind. He lives in Wheaton, Illinois with his wife, Kelsey, and their three children. Joe Vukov, what a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, because of the nature of the book, we're talking about staying human in an era of artificial intelligence.
I think in this era of AI, we're challenged about questions about what it is to be a human, but also questions about what human relationships are like in a world of AI and what a relationship with God might look like in an era of AI. And I think our challenge is really, how do we live in such an era and retain those aspects of our humanity?
Yeah.
So both on the one hand, retain our human ways of relating to each other, our human ways of relating to God, and making sure machines aren't getting in the way of that. But I also think really just as crucially is maintaining a sense of who we are as humans. So you can think about when the printing press first started, which was hugely revolutionary. But no one looked at a printed book and asked themselves, what does it mean to be human given this technology? Same thing with social media and the internet. When we invented that, it wasn't that we looked at what Facebook was doing and thought, this looks a lot like what a human being does and what makes me different from the internet. Whereas in the era of AI, I think people are really having those existential questions. They'll look at what AI does and they'll think, well, that doesn't seem like a human, but that poem is really good. And I thought poetry was something humans were supposed to do. So I think that we really are met with these challenges, again, both relationally, but I think also existentially of reflecting on how can I maintain my sense of my humanity when I'm being challenged in this way that maybe other technologies have never really challenged me to think about.
So you're invited to universities and panels to talk about this whole intersection of faith and science as twin pursuits of truth. And that ultimately, if I've understood from just a little bit that I've watched online on YouTube, it's some really cogent points you make about ultimately they should agree if we reach actual truth. And you quote both religious and philosophical and scientists about the different approaches. So AI, especially as it might apply to writing a sermon, I mean, it's predicting what a human would do. And yet, if you and I were to write a message for a congregation, we'd be hoping for some sort of outside inspiration to help improve or to guide that. Where do you fall on that? How useful a tool that is? And what is that thing that we believe or feel that we're getting from outside ourselves that maybe can or can't be duplicated by a machine?
I think it's a really great question. I think what's tricky here is that superficially, AI can write a pretty decent sermon, and it can write a pretty decent poem, and it can write a pretty decent essay. It's unusual here in that we could actually look at an AI-written sermon and a human-written sermon, and they're either indistinguishable or even more horrifying. Maybe the AI one's a little bit better than the one I would have written. I think that the questions you're asking, though, are exactly the right ones. And we can ask about, well, is the point of writing a sermon or writing a reflective essay or engaging in a particularly prayerful manner of writing? Sort of, we could imagine a whole bunch of different scenarios like that. Is the point of that thing the finished product? Because if that's the whole point of it, well, then maybe AI does just as good of a job. And we've got the proof because here's an AI-generated sermon that's actually pretty good, right? It's cogent. It makes three nice points. It's understandable by everyone. It's a nice length too. But then you can ask, well, but what have we missed in doing that? And I think the first thing that we miss is exactly what you hinted at, It's an openness to revelation, an openness to the divine. And even if we end up with this thing that looks superficially the same, we've missed the whole opportunity in both the writing and in the communicating to actually have God step into that picture and be part of the process of creating it. So we've kind of left the most important part out of the equation. Mm-hmm. You can kind of think here almost about means and thinking, where if you say, the whole purpose of me doing this is to have words on the page. Well, sure, then AI maybe can do that okay. But if the purpose is actually to encounter God in the process of writing and hopefully with that product to bring others closer to God, well, then you've missed the boat. And on the flip side, anyone who's written much, you know, even written your own emails, you find that in the process, you learn something about yourself, that you learn what it is you're trying to produce. You realize, oh, wait, that I thought I wanted to say that to grandma, but I got halfway into the email and I realized that's not actually what I want to say. Let me start over or revise things a little bit. And if you skip that whole process of the human involvement, the writer involvement, you're going to miss the human element as well. So I would argue that even if superficially you can get the same product, you've missed both the divine and human element of the writing process. And again, a sermon is a great example of this. A good sermon, that's really what it's all about in many ways, is connecting people through combination of divine revelation and the sermon writers bringing themselves into that text.
Yeah, you just mentioned we'd miss both the human and the divine experience. I want to have that experience go through me and change who I am. I'm just trying to picture someone setting up their AI every day at 7 a.m. to do their Lexio Divina for them. Like, please pick 4 verses and give me an analysis.
Exactly. And it's most laughable when we apply it to spiritual practices like that. Because mm-hmm. I think if you're a believer, you look at that and you think, well, obviously that's patently ridiculous. You've missed the whole point. But I think that you can actually generalize from that kind of example and think, well, what about writing a thank you note, an essay, a memo I've got to write? And I think it's less laughable there to say, well, let me turn to AI and let the AI do it. But I think that maybe to a lesser degree, the same problem is there, is that what you've done is you've removed your humanity from what would have been a very human activity. I mean, what's more human than writing an email or a letter, even better, handwritten, I would advocate for, but at least an email to grandma or your mom saying happy birthday or thanks for this or thanks for that. And can you get the product using an AI? Well, sure, you could, but you've lost your humanity or a little bit of it in the process.
Because you combine in your life elements of science and faith, talk to me, if you don't mind, about how you were raised in faith.
Yeah, so I was raised as a Christian. I was actually raised as an evangelical Christian and eventually found my way into the Catholic Church. Both of my parents were medical. So I grew up in Rochester, Minnesota, which is famous for being the home of the Mayo Clinic. So my parents were involved with Mayo and many people around me were involved with Mayo. And my parents and many of my parents' friends were also deeply faithful people. So I think I saw lived out day to day, you can be very serious about science, specifically medical science, and also be a person of deep faith. As I grew up, I had the same struggles that I think a lot of young people had, is that as I started learning more and more science and more philosophy and thinking, how can I fit this together with my faith? It seems like maybe these are going off in different directions. But then I eventually realized that they can actually not only fit together, but be deeply complementary. Our engagement with science can deepen our faith. We can learn more about ourselves, about creation, and that even though while you're kind of in the lab or in your science class or watching science YouTube videos, however you're engaging with science, that can seem removed from your belief system and your faith practices. But I think that oftentimes just a little bit of reflection shows us that, oh, wait, this actually can help me appreciate my belief system even more. One that always does it for me, and I'm a total amateur here, but I love astrophysics, just learning about the cosmos and stars and how far away they are and planets. And you could look at that and think, well, this scientific view is giving me this very cold picture of the cosmos, just matter and void floating around in space. But I've really come to appreciate it from the opposite end of the spectrum, where the more I learn about the science, the more that I have an appreciation for the grandeur of God's creation. And we know more about it scientifically that it only can help us love what God has created even more. Sometimes science and faith can still rub against each other and it can seem like there's some tension there. And I'm okay with that. Human evolution is a good example of this. That's a place where if you're a Christian and you have beliefs about how humans were created and you learn about human evolution, you can think for a while, well, I don't quite know how to fit these two things together. And can I have both? Do I need to choose between one or the other? And I really do think that sometimes those tensions are helpful because they can widen our understanding of both. And as a philosopher, I guess I'm okay dwelling in tension once in a while and thinking, I'm just going to hold on to these and sort of see how this works out and not running from the issue, but also not running from your faith right away either.
Well, it seems like both in faith and science, not knowing is a human condition. In fact, it almost requires not knowing to exercise faith, or it wouldn't
exactly
be faith.
Exactly. The tendency of humans to want to resolve any tension at all between science and faith often results from a misunderstanding of who we are as humans. Mm-hmm. Because who we are as humans is limited. That's the nature of our existence right now, at least. I think staying human and understanding who we are as humans, what that means as far as dignity goes, but also what that means as far as some of our limitations go, can be really crucial to our navigating the world successfully.
Well, and maybe this is just what I get from your personality, which is very open, very warm, very generous.
Thank you.
It seems like you have double the sources of joy and discovery and awe to me. That's what I'm feeling from what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think having that appreciation, it's a really crucial turning point, I think, is to see that I don't have to engage with these things as being opposed to each other. I don't have to even see something like AI as being, I can't deal with this at all as a person of faith, but rather thoughtfully engaging with it, even excitingly engaging with it, taking joy out of it. In the Catholic tradition, we talk a lot about God being the source of all truths, such that if something is true in the sciences, that's God's truth just as much as revealed truth that we're learning about when we go to church. So it's not that I have to say, oh, these truths over here, just because my physics teacher is teaching them to me, or because they're coming out of Silicon Valley and they have to do with AI, that they're somehow less important. No, if they're true, then they're from God, and therefore they are good in a way.
I'm Stephen Capp Perry. This is In Good Faith. More in just a moment. Hi, Stephen Capp Perry here, host of In Good Faith. Here's another podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts I hope you'll check out. What I Love is Real. You know that saying, real recognize real? That's Lisa on The Lisa Show. Lisa Valentine Clark is a comedian, she's a believer, a single mother, and on The Lisa Show podcast, you'll hear from the Council of Moms, a genius idea, which is actually one of my favorite parts of her show. And you'll hear about the challenges of life, parenting, mental health questions, social issues. Yes, you'll hear from experts, but also from people discussing their where the rubber meets the road life experience. It's The Lisa Show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In Good Faith. How do you anticipate AI changing how people worship, whether that's good or bad? And how would that influence our faith?
Increasingly in 21st century society, I think our practices, both in society in general, but also specifically as people of faith, and what we know to be true about God and ourselves, there's often a disconnect there, right? So even right now, I think is a great example, right? Is that we're recording a podcast, but we're geographically very distant from each other. We've got tons of technology mediating this. I mean, both our own personal technology, but there's clouds and there's servers somewhere that are doing
maybe
all this.
Maybe a satellite
mediation.
Or two.
Yeah, probably a satellite or two, right? There's this massive amount of technology being used to make this conversation happen. Mm. So we're living out our lives right now as if it didn't really matter that we would ever share a meal or be in the same space or worship God together. And we're practicing our lives like that, even while at the same time, I think if we were to have this conversation, you and I would both agree, well, no, those are actually the crucial parts of our humanity are being together geographically and going to church in an actual physical space. And as a Catholic, I'm going to talk a lot about the importance of the sacraments being actual bodily things that we do. We'd be on the same page thinking, no, our actual embodied geographically in the same place, going to church, those are really, really crucial parts of our humanity. So one thing that I really worry about in this era of AI is that, number one, our practices and our beliefs will become even further pulled apart. And my practices have even gone more technological. My worry is that we forget about the reality of things and we start thinking that the whole picture is actually the practices that we've adopted. And so, for instance, you know, just before we hit record, Steve, we were talking about, oh, we should get together in Provo sometime. And that my worry is that we forget that that's really important. And We say, meeting on Zoom is good enough. Going to church on YouTube is good enough. And we forget that actually what makes us human beings, both as humans and also in our relationship to God, can't just be something purely technological. So it's something I really want to try and always remind people is AI isn't the worst thing ever. It's not something we need to run from. But as we engage with it, we have to do so in ways that we're constantly reminding ourselves who we are and what's really important, or else we run this risk of losing ourselves in the process.
And as you mentioned in the sacraments, those are things we physically are present for. We take in physically, like communion, those types of things. You talk about an embodied view that largely, I think, comes from your faith beliefs, from Catholicism.
It does.
And a view of resurrection. And would you talk to me a little bit about the importance of that embodiment?
Yeah. So in the Catholic tradition, we believe that the human being is a combination of body and soul. So I am not me without my soul, but also without my body. Number one, AI doesn't check either of those boxes for different reasons. It's clear that it doesn't have a soul, but it also, maybe even more clearly, doesn't have a body, a biological body like you and I have. And we believe human bodies are absolutely essential to who we are. To the degree that, as you mentioned, the resurrection is a crucial part of our eschatology or our belief in the end times, that no, it's actually not you, Joe, unless you get your body back. So the resurrection is not sort of some icing on the cake. It's actually an instrumental part of our belief in the end times, is that you need your body back.
You talk about how AI will reflect both the good and bad of humanity, because AI, and I didn't realize this at first, trains on humanity. Like,
it does.
Absorbs the books we write, absorbs the things we say in a podcast, absorbs and then creates and predicts. And so it seems like whatever might be sort of faulty or a frailty in us, will that show up? I mean, can AI sin? Is there original sin because it's based on humans?
Yeah, that is in fact how AI works, is it's called training. Mm-hmm. And it's a technical process, and one, honestly, that's far beyond my pay grade. I'm a philosopher by training, so I don't pretend I know exactly how this works.
Well, same. I just expended all my knowledge to ask that question.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Thank you.
Yes, but roughly the way it works is you give it a lot of data, right? Uh-huh. So again, it could be podcasts, it could be Wikipedia articles, it could be eBooks, it could be just snapshots of the internet. The more text, the better, because as you give it more and more, it recognizes patterns in those texts, mm-hmm. or images or videos. But of course, this shouldn't be a surprise for any of your listeners. Anyone who's spent more than 2 seconds on the internet knows that there's a lot of garbage out there too.
Yep.
And that humans produce a lot of good content, but also some pretty garbage content. There's a lot of just bad stuff out there too, and a lot of just plain false stuff too. So inevitably, as you're building these machines, the AI is going to reflect the good parts of what it gets trained on, the good parts of what we've produced as humanity, but also the really bad and ugly parts as well. And then you have this question, which is a super interesting one, is, well, what to make of an AI that's gone sour? What to make of an AI that, whether intentionally or unintentionally, has been trained on lots of really bad stuff and starts just saying really offensive things or horrible things, mm-hmm. or maybe just false things? Is that a sign of original sin in the AI? And I think the answer is no, because I don't think that AI is a person. So I don't think we can attribute things like sin or salvation or sort of anything that we would attribute to a person to an AI. What I do think it is it's kind of a carnival mirror of ourselves, in which if you stand in a certain way at a carnival mirror, it makes you maybe look a little bit better. You know, maybe my shoulders get a little wider and oh man, looks like I've been going to the gym more. But then you stand in other places and the carnival mirror makes it so that you have a, you know, a huge forehead, or, you know, my gut's really big instead of my shoulders. And I think that's kind of what AI does, is it reflects ourselves back to ourselves in a way that can distort certain features, but not in a totally false way, in a way that makes us pay attention to those features more. So I actually think that it can reflect all the garbage that humans can produce is actually an opportunity for us to realize that, oh, that stuff was there all along. And the machine is amplifying it in the way a carnival mirror might amplify something. I think what could be a really good way, if we take the time to think about it, it's reflecting our sin and making us look more closely at ourselves.
That's a great analogy and a very visceral experience most of us have had. I wonder if you could talk to me about what makes you feel connected to God?
Yeah, I pray regularly. Mm-hmm. And I think that my experience with prayer is that in the moment, it can oscillate day to day, whether I feel the connection or not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Monday, I'll pray for a little while in the car ride to work, and it will feel very dry, and I won't feel connected to God at all. But then the next day, I pray the exact same prayer at the exact same time. I'm driving, I have a long commute, so I pray a lot in the car. And that time it's like, I'm just completely connected to God. So I think that can really vary. But what I have noticed is that long-term, when I'm praying regularly, I feel a much deeper sense of connection to God overall. Even while day-to-day prayer can oscillate my feeling of connection to God, a long-term commitment to prayer regularly really deepens my connection and my sense of the divine in my everyday life. Again, as a Catholic, we have a sacramental theology. So we understand bodily participation in the Eucharist. We do things like confession or reconciliation that are all things that you do live and in person. And we understand God's grace to be operative in those bodily acts. So that's another one too. And I would say the exact same thing is true, is that the particular moment when I go to a church service or go to mass, some days it might feel great. Other days I might be thinking about my giant to-do list I have to get to the next day. But I think long-term, the more I engage with those kinds of practices, the more that I feel a deeper sense of engagement with God.
Mm. I'm really impressed by your car praying example, having done that a few times myself in my life and remembering not to close my eyes.
That's a crucial one.
The idea that some days you may feel very connected, but maybe other days not so much, that's a very human thing. And that might even be just, did I get enough sleep or not? Or I have a lot on the back of my mind and I'm not letting go of it. That seems like an exercise that we are meant to push through to find God.
Exactly. Yeah, and I would say that it's dangerous to ground our faith and our relationship with God in what we're feeling day to day. Because like you said, that can depend on, did I skip breakfast? Did I have a bad day yesterday? Did one of my kids keep me up all night crying? I may not feel very connected to God at all if I didn't get any sleep because the baby kept me up all night. So I think it can be dangerous to think that I need to feel that connection to continuing to engage in prayer or in spiritual practices. It's a matter of belief and will, and knowing that God's listening, and knowing that my engagement with God in prayer is what God's calling me to do. And what's cool is that long-term, that the more that you're actually committed without worrying about what the feeling is, actually the deeper the feeling grows as you go, because you've built a life around prayer and connection with God. Mother Teresa notoriously talked about how she felt this great silence of God for decades. and nonetheless continued to pray, continued to serve the poorest of the poor. So I think she's a great example of the fact that sometimes even a life of commitment doesn't lead to the feeling of being connected, and that we just have to trust God that He knows what He's doing best for us in that moment.
And what a surprising thing to hear from her, because she's one of the icons we hold up, but maybe also giving hope on the days when we're not quite feeling so connected, that we still move forward in faith to do the thing that we felt called to do or that we believe is good.
I think in some ways it is very hopeful that we can also be people of great faith, even if we're not getting those nice feelings, which of course we all love them, right? I mean, who doesn't love the feeling of being connected with God? We can take courage that, oh, I can still pursue God and love my family, even if I'm not getting the bonus good feelings as well.
You suggest a possible remedy to problems that come with AI are to focus on, quote, humanity first alignment. So what is that and how can it help us?
Yeah. So the idea of alignment, it's sort of a fancy word for thinking about what goals and values is the AI serving. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, an AI is going to be aligned towards profit or efficiency that's at the level both of design, but also the user end. So what am I using an AI for? Well, it's because I've got some data to crunch or text to write or an image to create. And it's going to be more efficient if I use an AI than if I was to do it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and not only that a human element is included somewhere in the list, but you're saying human first.
I want to say human first, exactly. How can we align AI so that it's serving humanity first before profit and efficiency? Mm-hmm. How do we think about the most vulnerable? And is this product serving them? And how can we think about bringing people closer together rather than farther apart? And we can ask, and I think this actually generalizes not just to AI, but to other technologies as well. We can ask, does using this technology bring me closer to others? Does it make me more human? Does it bring me closer to God? Or does it undermine those things? And sometimes it's going to be tricky, but I think a lot of times the answer is actually going to be pretty obvious.
This episode was produced by Aaliyah Ebert. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley, Katarina Martinich, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Ashton Parkinson, and Lauren Sandberg. Spread the word about In Good Faith by leaving a comment and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. We think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Our YouTube page is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Capp Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here in Good Faith.